Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C., it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio. QLPOR, as it's widely known, features a bevy of poets, spoken word artists, and live poetry readings with best-selling authors. Your host is Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Hello, everyone. I'm honored to have award-winning poet and author, Dr. Hiram LaRue, as my special guest tonight. I have a great deal of admiration for Dr. LaRue, who resides in Maryland. He has achieved significant success as the founder of Poetry X Hunger, bringing the world of poetry to the anti-hunger cause. His poetry has appeared in journals such as Poetry South, The Brown Critique, and Contemporary American Voices. A new collection of his poems, Patchy Days, was published by Cyberwit Press in 2023. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. LaRue.
Good evening. Dr. Ingram, I am so honored to be here with you. It's a great privilege. Thank you.
Actually, the honor is mine. I really do. I think you are an incredible, incredible person, and I commend all the good works that you do.
Well, thank you, sir. As in all things, this is the Poetry X Hunger is a big group effort. Maybe we'll have a chance towards a little bit later on in the program to talk a little bit about that initiative. I'd love to if we do.
Yes, I'd love to hear more. Now, Patchy Ways. Tell me about it. What inspired you to write the book?
Well, Michael, you know, I have to say, right at the beginning, I have lived a very privileged life. Yeah. And in a way, I kind of feel honor-bound to acknowledge that upbringing and to share a gratitude that never assumes luck, but that really does try to express an amazement with what we call living. And so, said slightly differently, I hope through this collection and the others that I've been able to produce to kind of plant a garden with big hopeful tomato poems growing in it to share. And so, yes, I wrote the book as a way of offering what I would call red, ripe garden tomatoes to folks. I just wanted to try to give through the poems.
Well, Patchy Ways, what does that mean?
Yeah, Patchy Ways. I've enjoyed kind of uncertainties as I've lived. I've enjoyed a lot of uncertainties, a lot of doubts, many steps forward, many more steps back. And, of course, I've learned along the way. And so I realize that I'll always be learning forever. And in the meantime, I've kind of patched things together a little bit from here, some from there. I've found a way that clearly isn't perfect, but for that reason and for that reason seems kind of perfectly patchy for me. So I chose this title as a kind of a reflection of at least one way of living.
Now, was the title created during childhood or you heard it from your parents, you know, that expression, Patchy Ways, or is it something you created yourself?
No, it came about, I think, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, probably in the middle of the night when I woke up and eyes blinking and kind of going, Patchy Ways. It first started as a title of a poem, and that poem was in the collection. And then as I thought about that title of the poem, I thought, you know, I think I'd kind of be comfortable, even relish having that title for the entire collection. So that's where it came from.
Now, this is your sixth collection, am I correct?
Right, yes, uh-huh.
So did you write this particular collection during the pandemic, before the pandemic, after the pandemic? Talk to me.
Yeah, I wrote many of the poems during the pandemic. And again, as a result of that, being so grateful that I could even write and that I was in a place that was so conducive to writing. A few of the poems I pulled from kind of my older inventory, I guess you'd say, of poems, but most of the poems were written during the pandemic and then assembled. I went to a writer's getaway about a year ago, something like that, and began to kind of assemble them into the collection. Yeah.
How did the pandemic affect your writing?
Well, in an odd sort of way, I think it contributed and moved some of my work a little bit further, simply because we were so closed down. Any kind of human interaction through modes like you and I are using to visit with this evening, or certainly Zoom, were so appreciated. We were so grateful. We have been and continue to be so grateful for those connections. And I think also because I about the same time that the pandemic clamped down, I moved to a waterfront cottage that I rent, and it's just remarkably beautiful pretty much every minute of the day and night. And so for that, I was able to get out and enjoy the outdoors, realizing that the outdoors didn't expect or didn't respect a pandemic. It was still very beautiful outdoors, so I found some solace in that.
Right. You know, I would share the expression that it's beautiful but deadly at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking about that, wow, something. Now, the cover of your book, Patchy Ways, it is so striking, the simplicity of it. Tell me more about it.
Well, I do prefer simple covers.
Okay.
And so I asked the publisher at Cyberwit Press if they might design a look that wasn't glossy or kind of splashy. And I asked that the prime real estate called the back cover be used to showcase a poem from the collection. And they seemed quite willing to do that. I just kind of like, yes, the simplicity of it, with the hope that then, you know, the person viewing the cover might be kind of curious enough to open up the book. We'll find out. Yeah.
So the color green, any specific reason for green for the patch?
I've always loved green and all shades of it. And, yeah, so I think something there, kind of renewal, hopeful, all of those sorts of terms come to mind when I think of green.
All right, very nice. Now, when you think about the book in terms of some of the predominant themes, let's go over those again. What do you share about?
Okay, I would say that the predominant theme of these poems is wonder, a little bit of wander as well. These poems wander or echo, and a lot of them ask. There are a few kind of narrative poems that are included, and they, of course, they tell a story or harken back to ancestors and kind of ruminate about those. But many of these poems explore without necessarily finding, and there are several poems that are simply giddy for being out in the open field of what I call the moment. So they're kind of a combination of look back, look up, look forward, look out, and overall, I'm hoping to convey a sense of wonder.
All right. Everyone, Dr. Hiram LaRue, you're on, sir.
Well, thank you. Michael, again, my gratitude to you. Let me read about three or four poems here I've got. This first one is a little bit older one, but it does appear in Patchy Ways. And it's all about adolescence. I am always amazed by and kind of flummoxed by the whole process of my having grown up and anyone growing up. So this one's about adolescence or its awakening, and it first appeared in the Tall Review. It's titled Roy. You have to be at least 20 years old to figure out how far's a mile. Why so old? Because when you're only knee-high, all you know are boats on a dress, never trouble. And at 14 or 15, all of your friends are popcorn. It's only at 20 or thereabouts that you start making calls to get real answers, or all of a sudden notice that that dot up there in the distance just waved. And this next one, as I get older, I think more about getting older. And so this one is kind of focused on that process and its finality. It's titled Twist by Rise. Cover me with branches down, for grass is plain, or roaming vines, their twists that rise. Cover me as shining dirt that teases time, or bury sound my underleaves, my fluster clouds, my going. Then oak this time, this overall, this wander off beyond. Cover me as wishing can in purely coulds, or deep inside this chuckling shade. Cover me with always will, these handsome boughs, this hillside bound. And as I mentioned here a minute ago, I've always been interested in the kind of the process of growing up and self-discovery. This piece first appeared in a calendar, a lunar calendar that tracks the phase every day of the moon. And it's also published by Luna Press. And it's also, this poem has also been translated into German beautifully, I think, by Stephanie Niles. It's titled Clusters. When I was 15, I learned to visit the moon with a backpack of wonder. My paint was stars. Such sights were my clusters, and travel came folded in blankets. Yes, when I was 15, I wandered the moon's surface like silver and learned before ever learning anything else how bold something silent or off to itself could be. And the last in this set is what I would call an early morning hymn or chant. It's titled Psalmed, like the biblical psalm, but this is kind of past tense, psalmed. Frayed with joy, tossed by light recited, flying upside down with giddy, as whistled branches flick or glow each passage. Slicks of grass sweeping, or weak-kneed breezy hymns that lift the loving scattered from each and every bow of aisle. And most of all, this want for words, this lost by heart in fields, this silly worship leaping. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you. Process what you've shared. What I'd first like to know is the word wonder. What compels you to write about it? I want to hear more about that. Tell me, what compels you to write about wonder?
You know, I don't mean to sound corny, but as I get a little bit older, I just am so grateful for the time I have and mm-hmm. the time I have had, particularly when I realize, as I mentioned at the outset, that that comes, you know, with a course load of privilege. One way I have of dealing with that is to simply express gratitude. And for me, there's a great deal of wonder. Wonder fills gratitude. And so that's where some of the wonder comes from.
All right. So generally then, what moves you to write a poem? What is the core impulse for you, my friend?
It tends to be different every poem.
Okay.
Sometimes, and I'm sure many, if not all, other poets probably experience something similar in a very unexpected way. An idea, thought, phrase, or feeling will pop up unexpectedly out of nowhere and be unrelated to anything I was just thinking about and will demand that I, either try to capture it, write it down, because if I don't write it down, I forget it, and then explore it. And so I do not, like so many wonderful poets, have a regimen or a routine for writing. I tend to write when moved to write, I guess you'd say, or when...
Yes.
when urged to write by the words that are coming.
So when you think about writing this particular book, how many poems did you compose, and what was the selection process like? How did you decide what to choose?
Yeah. Well, of course, many poets work on a theme or a timeline. I typically have not, and I do not. I just, for whatever reason, I prefer poems that kind of romp around a bit. And so... Mm-hmm. I wanted poems with different tones, different topics, different faces, if you will, in the collection. And most of the poems were written in, as we were saying earlier, in recent months.
Yes.
Many have appeared elsewhere. And so I held back a few pieces that, you know, I thought maybe they're not quite ready, or maybe a future collection. So that's a little bit of the kind of the process that I used.
All right. So in terms of your strategy for organizing the poems in the collection, tell me more about that.
Yeah, the poems are arranged. Now, this is all my hope.
Okay, all right.
Poems in the collection in a way that I'll say kind of winks at the reader and prods the reader or nudges the reader forward and kind of hopefully reaches out and maybe even entices the reader to follow along. And if there's kind of a progression or a timeline in the collection, it's one that, you know, perhaps mirrors the hodgepodge nature of living itself. I think there is a little bit of the that hodgepodge in the collection, and that's kind of intentional.
Okay. And I'd like to go to the phone lines. Got a caller. I'd like to bring this person on.
Great.
Are you ready, Hire?
Sure.
Right. Okay. Area code 240. First three numbers are 353. You're on the air with Dr. Hiram LaRue. Good evening. Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening.
This is my lucky day.
I think I might know who this is.
I do.
What about you, Dr. LaRue?
Does Dr. LaRue know who it is?
I think I do, Lady Di.
Lady Di.
Thank you. I'm glad.
Yes.
Happy to hear you. It's exciting.
Yes.
I like hearing how you arrive at your poetry. I've never asked you that before, or never thought of how your process. And,
well, you know, Lady
you
Di, sometimes I think. Yeah, sometimes I think, Lady Di, we're also involved in attending readings where we hear each other read our work. We don't spend too much time asking each other, well, how did you, you know, how do you. Yeah, the process. And so that's what's so magical about Dr. Ingram's show. He kind of both presents, you know, allows us to present some of the poems, but then kind of steps behind the curtain and asks, well, so what was, you know, how did you do that?
His questions are very, they pull a lot out of you, you know. You bring things you hadn't thought about it. You hadn't thought about it. You just did it, you know. I just do it. You know. And I like how your metaphors bring a real hearty wonder. I think the metaphors that you use, so many metaphors. And like how bold is darkness, quiet. I say quiet boldness. That's what came to me, a quiet, like the darkness of the sky, the dark sky at night.
I'm really enjoying
it. Go ahead, Hiram.
I was going to say, I might have to use that phrase.
Very nice.
Which one, quiet boldness?
Yes. Right.
Well, anyway, I'm enjoying it. So you two have a good time, and I'll be enjoying myself listening to you. Both.
All right. Thank you so
it's
much.
It's my lucky night.
All right.
My lucky night. Thank you.
It's our lucky night, too. All right. Thank you so much. Okay.
Thank
you know,
you.
Hiram, as you think about the book itself, what was the easiest part of writing it? And to follow that, what was potentially the most challenging part about writing it?
The collection itself?
Yes.
Yeah. Probably the most gratifying part of it was just seeing the poems begin to work with or around each other, just beginning to pull them together and seeing how they might actually constitute a collection. That was gratifying. Probably the most challenging was getting them dressed up and ready to go. And I mean by that, as we may have a chance to visit about here in a few minutes, I tend to revise. Respect the revision process quite a bit. And so spending time revising them, which I enjoyed doing, but it was, you know, that took some time and took some attention, and I had to get their Sunday best on to go out, you know, and make sure that everything was shipshape. So that was probably the most time-intensive portion of the process.
All right. Please share some more of your work.
Sure. So I was lucky enough about a year ago, about a year and a half ago, to go to a writer's getaway, and I was stopped really mid-walk, mid-breath almost, by a field that I was walking by out in the country at this getaway, and all that field offered. this poem was first published in an anthology produced by Maryland Bards. It's the poem is titled Ode to Stubbled Fields. Where mountains blend old with frost, how morning's dawn brings orange to blue inside us. Where crows that are so fully made long, and winter pens away, or leaves drift back, or chosen songs forever hum. Where brambles edge the less with more, and dark berries of. These marvels come so happened upon. Their early crests are all there is of knowing. Yes, where mountains blend only here with only if, and take each heart its sake to opened days in stubbled fields. Michael, before I go to the next poem, I just mentioned I'm kind of getting excited. I'm hoping it's all going to work out. I'm working with a professional whistler to whistle behind that poem, The Stubbled Fields. And I'm really hoping, I've always wanted whistling to accompany some of my poems, and so I'm hoping that that will all work out. This next one is all about resilience and what a person should or can do when worn out or feeling kind of low. It's titled Arms Widely. If you get angry, walk backwards. If you're terribly lonely, sing off key. When too tired to begin, wear bright socks. You'll love it. And if you're worried or anxious, just remember last summer's trees. If you're feeling poorly at the moment, read history. And over all of that, if or as you're giving up, let some kids come in. This poem, upcoming poem, was written during a time I had in Ireland at a writer's cottage. And it mentions, it's kind of all about the Irish potato famine, which occurred from 1845 to 1849 and was devastating. At that time, or just before the potato famine, potatoes were planted in rows of what were called lazy beds. They were called lazy beds because they were a little bit easier to dig. So they were called lazy beds. And the poem is titled Lazy Beds. There was nothing romantic about them. No misty aura or smoke or dreams. No bedtime stories. They beckoned no fairies to hover and plucked no harps. From these hillsides came the poorest potatoes in thin soils of history as a withered future. They were planted in spring and seemed hopeful with sprouts. But then, as feared by worried mothers, vines shriveled under clouds as rot took away each and every comfort. So come autumn's frost and waiting hearts, only meager was found. What few meals were dug up got carried to peaty grates in mud poor sacks, and buttermilk or seaweed, if at all, was mixed in to stave the soul. These lazy beds, their hillsides, their lack and starve and lost, are all abandoned now, gone as ghosts to ever sake. And here's one, last one in this set, about, it's a love song to frustration. It first appeared in the Iowa Review, and it's titled Spite. What a day it's been. with every ornery stepping forward. It started with a hole that should have been butter to dig, but was cussed with rocks. Next came some green, oily smoke rolling through with alarm from somewhere close by. And meaner than all of that was the hornet's nest that should have been as easy as pie to get at, but was in fact buried deep down in thorns like the devil. What might otherwise have been plain and simple became whipped up and shouting with no clear cause at all, except, of course, for the world's ongoing need to connive. Thanks, Michael.
Oh, wow. You know, Hiram, there's just something about your voice. Have any of your books been made into audiobooks?
The last collection, before Patrick Ways, the collection before that was titled Mitre Jar, and it was audio narrated into an audiobook by the one and only T.A. Niles. So, yes,
it's
available. And he's got that voice, the end-all voices, as they say. So.
Yes, he has an incredible voice, and so do you. And I was wondering, what is the connection or relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice?
It's interesting. I remember early on as I was starting to go out to readings, you know, back in the day when things were all in person and there weren't too many people at readings, mentioning to folks that so many of the poets, as they got up to the mic, their behavior, mm-hmm. their posture, and their voice changed completely. And somebody said, well, yours did too, LaRue. And so, yeah, I think something about, I try to kind of honor, and I know that sounds kind of wonky, but I do try to kind of honor the poem by trying to read it, you know, in a way that folks can hear clearly and so on. So, yeah, I do enjoy reading them aloud. I was read aloud to a lot when I was a kid, and I have very big ears. So I think, you know, I just enjoy hearing poems being read aloud.
All right. I'd like you to share with me the titles of five poems in the book.
Sure.
Five poems? Yes.
Yeah. There are, I think, a total of about 70 poems in the book. And
oh, wow.
Here are just a few, just to kind of give you a flavor. One is titled Start Hillsides. Another one is titled More Than This. One is titled Slowing Feels. Another, all about kind of the wonder that I have with anything that looks backlit, is titled An Edges Lit. And, of course, I have to have one in here called A Corner Life. So I kind of like the slant. I kind of like kilter in titles.
Okay. So when you're titling a poem, what should you consider? What recommendations would you give to others in terms of titling?
Sure. Well, I wouldn't presume to suggest a process for others, but I do enjoy the process of titling. I really do. A lot of people are concerned about that process, but I just absolutely love titling. I often pull a phrase from the poem. And it's often an unexpected or, as I just said, kind of an off-kilter phrase that may have, you know, hopefully may have the reader kind of wonder and wanting to know more. In some cases, the poem does ask to be titled with a title that isn't embedded in the poem, mm-hmm. but seems kind of derived from it. So kind of a mix of processes, but bottom line is I enjoy titling the pieces.
So when you write, what comes first, the title or the poem itself?
Mm-hmm. Chicken or egg? Well,
yes, that's right. That's what I was thinking.
I tend to write poems. I think I tend to write them first, and then title them, and then revise them, and then revise them, and then revise them, and then have them return unaccepted from an editor, and revise them again. So I enjoy the revising process.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also been warned not to over revise. I think there is a danger of doing that as well.
Mm-hmm. So, about the revising and the editing, I'm not sure whether I've asked you this before, and I need to make a note to everyone. Dr. LaRue's been with me before, a number of years ago, so I'm really, really glad that he's back with me. In terms of editing, some poets claim that a poem is like a living creature. Once it's out there, there's not much you can do to correct or improve it, while others edit meticulously, not leaving much from the original draft form. What is your take on it? And based on what you've shared, you like to edit.
I do. Let me put it this way, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
I have often found that in the heat of writing a poem that I feel is the best thing I've ever done.
Okay.
I know now enough to respect time as my most useful critic. And so I've learned to, okay, in the heat of the moment, you may think this is great, but give yourself a little bit of time, and usually like 90% of the time, I'll come back to the poem and go, oh, no. I like these few lines here, but, it needs a little bit of work, or it's too unclear, or it's too clear, or it doesn't have the pacing or the rhythm that I'm looking for. So I do tend to revise. A lot of folks believe in the spontaneity of the moment, capture
yes.
it on the page, so and let it glitter there, and that's absolutely wonderful. I completely respect that. My own process requires that I go back and take another look.
So who leads, you or the poem, in terms of its development?
Oh, who owns who? Well, I think for me, one of the wonderful ways that poetry is really magic is how it kind of sprouts from very, very, very small seeds. And yeah, sure, I hope to guide that process as the poem grows, but often it's not. I simply kind of step back and gawk at how the poem becomes. I try not to lose complete control, but there's an awful lot of just inert momentum in a piece that comes from somewhere that I have learned to respect. And often what that means for me is being in a space, being in a place, being in a quiet enough spot, often right before I go to sleep, where, I can just let the ideas, the thoughts, the feelings emerge.
Mm-hmm.
And then try to make sense of them and try to capture some of them.
Moncal Kalu made the following statement, and I'm sure he's not the only one, that poetry is like a canvas. You can paint any picture with it. And so what I'd like to know is, how large was the canvas that you used to write these poems in this book? Was it the size of the limit?
I use all kinds of paintbrushes.
Talk to
and can't paint. In fact, I have a poem in this called Splash Paint. The canvas, that's a really interesting question. And quote, I think for me, many poems get started kind of small, then grow large in approach or in focus. But then towards the end, I find that some of the revision process is trying to kind of maybe contain them a bit, guardrail them, begin to have them what I call behave a little bit. I want them to be rowdy. I do want them to be rowdy, but I don't want them to tear up the house. I'll put it that way.
Why not?
Kind of wanting.
Why
yeah,
not?
I kind of wanting.
Why can't they tear up the house? I mean, that sounds like fun.
Well, it might be. And maybe sometime I will do that, Michael.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back.
Great.
I am Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with the great Dr. Hiram LaRue. Hiram, please share some more of your work.
Well, thank you, Michael, for this opportunity again. This poem is all about that privilege that I've mentioned a couple of times. It first appeared in Fevers of the Mind. It's titled Wellborn. When every day floats by like smoothest cream, and all you've known are peaches, when every day is cream or bluest skies or languid sighs, while others try as might, if every day is ladled cream or spoons to lick, then yes, what does someone else's curdled anger mean? Here's a poem about what I call the gratitude for the day's grin. It's titled Hinge. If clouds could sidle up to us as friends, if what we wished oiled every hinge or had us spend all our time outside or framed each page with light foretold, and if cans on shelves were faces held, the ones we've grown to love. If keys opened all the wind for us, or weeds hid gold inside. If echoes from the well came up to treasure us. If all such miracles were hardly said, like thunder far away, if tasseled corn would teach us songs, or only this, if vines could whistle from porches. This next one is about the love of errors or mistakes. It first came out in Live Encounters. It's titled A Good Many. The wisdom of mistakes, their joyous failings, are all gifts of wrong sublime. in fact, a life that errors its way through each extraordinary bungle makes the stars in heaven. And flaws are really lasting wonders in disguise. There's such joy in sour cream. Poor choices turn bedazzling. They become loving bundles of handsome weeds. And let us never forget what a kinked hose really means. Its hellish tangles suddenly become the gushing holy of holies to every waiting, wilted soul. And this last one in the set is all about an off-balance sweep of a poem. It's titled Kilter. Promising you what spins off or comes unglued or slips from first to last when not looking. Promising you, too, the gift of mystery seeds and unmatched rhymes. Promising all treasures held and hid for lots later, especially those beyond and undescribed, from top to bottom and in accord, like starry wands or shadows noon. Promising you all slippery things, the slowing blue, the slant that tends to open. Thanks, Michael.
Oh, wow. Hiram. Incredible. What I'd like to know, I think you shared that there's 70 poems in the book.
Right, about 70.
Okay. So what I'd like to know is there a poem in the book that humbled or frightened you?
Oh, wonderful question. Well, there are a couple of poems that are just a titch more personal, and I mean by that more kind of directly biographical than okay. I'm used to writing. And so those were, I wrote them with a little bit of trepidation, but I went ahead and wrote them. And so
okay.
I think those were maybe the ones that daunted me the most. Yeah.
Well, would you be willing to share one of those? I hate to put you on the spot. I'm going to ask anyway.
Yeah, I think there's one coming up towards the
okay.
end
all right.
that maybe
all right.
is. And that one about, I don't know if you remember it or not, but I up of the way here a little ways, I read one about kind of covering me with shiny dirt. That's a
yes.
little bit more personal as well. So, yeah.
So as you think about promoting the book, sharing the book, is there a specific audience that you're attempting to reach or just a broad range of readers?
Well, Michael, you know, I think to be honest, any poet living today or mm-hmm. not living today, living, you know, many years ago, would have to admit the need for, really the want for acceptance of her or his work by contemporaries. So, yes, I certainly hope that my poems will resonate with readers broadly. But, you know, I also see enough of poems that have lasted or endured over the years, even over the centuries. I've seen enough of those poems to know that those poems' future readers are who decide the fate of the poems. In other words, future readers often are the judges of what lasts, if you will. And so for them, I'm hoping that some of these poems provide some freshness for those future readers, you know, who I will never know, but they'll provide some freshness and some, a few maybe aha moments. So kind of writing for both contemporary readers and those to come. Yeah.
As I researched for tonight, and for others in the past as well, a question that I kept finding in the literature over and over and over again is that there are people out there that believe that poetry is dying. So what I'd like you to share with me, do you agree or disagree with this statement and why?
Yeah. Well, I come from a very biased point of view because, you know, I am steeped, knee-deep or maybe even butt-deep in poetry at this point.
Okay.
I just absolutely love it and thrive on it. So my sense is that poetry is as vibrant, as robust, as popular as it's ever been. Having said that, I know that there are lots of folks who are gun-shy of poetry or just shy
yes.
of poetry.
Yes.
And I respect that, but I've also seen some of those very same people come to poetry with eyes wide open once it's made a little bit more approachable, more friendly. You know, these folks have just kind of gotten the religion of poetry. So that's a very long way of saying, I believe that poetry is having its moment currently.
All right. So what, Hiram, are you attempting to convey to your readers?
Well, as mentioned, I think, you know, to the extent that I can convey a bit of
yes.
amazement, appreciation,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gratitude in some of these poems, that's kind of what I'm hoping to convey. And if I were to be asked, you know, how to read these poems, how to read this
yes.
book, what would you give? Well, I would say, close your eyes. I know you can't close your eyes when you're reading a poem, but close your eyes. And they were written in a place of gratefulness. They kind of ask for closed eyes. And as we were mentioning earlier, a few of these poems I've recorded, and the audio recording files are available. And most importantly, the last collection, Metajar, was turned magically into an audiobook by the narrator, T.A. Niles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Please share some more of your work. I enjoy hearing you read.
Well, thank you. You let me know if I need to cut any of these. I mean,
no,
you know, cut down
no,
on the number of poems.
Okay. No, we're fine.
So this one is all kind of about the the basics, the fundamentals of being a human. I know that sounds pretty grandiose, but that's the way I would kind of introduce it. It's titled, You or Me. We all need to realize that most people worldwide pick their teeth. Nearly everyone does, everywhere. And if that seems too odd of a way to leave war alone, then someone should maybe point out that each of us, everyone, young or old, sits down at the day's end as birds head home. I mentioned tomatoes and growing them here a while back, and here they are in a poem. This one's titled, A Bad Year for Tomatoes. Such hope there was in early June, with lush and vines and roots gone wild, and stalks tied up from overgrown, and two with ready jars for pudding. But nothing turned red in time, or swelled as was expected. What a piddling august take there was. The drooping nibs or oozing spots, only ants came rushing in. How foolish our first grinning was in leafy June that ended on such shriveled pips and fallen offs. All of this has been a lesson peek at forward arms, the warning times in Giddy. And here's a piece about all that we throw away when we use lovely throwaway phrases. It first came out in Wild Greens, and it's entitled Intentions. How maybe so gives up, or really should haves sneak off, and only ifs are only said. Or how that just make do foregoes, while really hope so turns to fog, or we knew better never does. How those best wishes are almost always not. Like, that's a shame, is useless. It seems so easy to say away so little, to care like all the air inside of, dear, oh dear. And here's a gratitude poem, believe it or not, about regret. About regret. It came out in Angel House Press. It's titled, Where Did? And it's the last one in the set. Where did? The lives we've left undone. Our breezy plans of never mades. With years and years of mistaken yanked ups or even tossed aways. And all of those unused tickets. Those times of just this once we never risked. Even every didn't know or didn't care we relished. Yes, we've only thought of comfort. So what of now? These waking ups to little chance or sudden wants. The why, oh whys of should-haves. And more, the wooden fences we peek through. Thank you, Michael.
Oh. Hiram, what do you think makes poets?
Sorry, Michael, you're breaking up just a little bit.
Okay, I'm sorry. What do you think makes poets different from other people?
Well, many of the poets are orange or different color. That's a wonderful question because I've seen such diversity, wonderful diversity.
That's what I was thinking.
In their voices. And so and from every walk of life, every background, of course, every culture, every political affiliation, every fan of a different baseball team. I mean, there are poets of all stripes. And so it's hard to know if there's any kind of degree of separation. Maybe flipping it around, I'd say that I've been incredibly and wonderfully surprised by folks who I would never assume tuned in at all to poetry, just from their body language or cut of hair or whatever, who, in fact, love poetry. So I've been fooled many a time, and so I'm hesitant to even hazard a guess what the distinctions are.
So writing this book, and we need Patchways.
Yep. And I'm sorry, you broke up just a little bit.
Okay, I'm sorry, sir. But I believe that we need a book, a collection like Patchways. There's this so much chaos in the world. So a book that brings a sense of calm, in my estimation, is extremely important.
Well,
as I listen
to you,
it helps center me. I feel centered listening to you.
Interesting. Well, of course, I really appreciate that. I'm thinking that, as you say, with all the ruckus that's going on, very
yes.
rough and very disconcerting, and we even worry about the future, I deflect to, I am concerned, and that's where Poetry X Hunger comes in, but
mm-hmm.
I'm also, I kind of deflect to, okay, so what can I depend on? Many people depend on their faith. I tend to especially look for solace in nature, and a lot of my poems are grounded in that looking up and looking out as I walk outside each day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a question that I usually ask, and it's something similar to the following, and I'm paraphrasing now. That because we live in a world where there is so much ruckus, that poets should write about the ruckus, that there's their responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't write about rocks. They should write about the ruckus. What do you think about that?
I would say they should write about the ruckus, and they should write about the rocks. I think we
okay.
need all of those voices speaking
mm-hmm.
up. And I absolutely love much of the work that's being done today about the headlines. It's important that we speak up, that we speak out, that we can confront, and that we persevere through all of these troubled times. I also think that we all need a little bit of balm, and I spell that B-A-L-M, not B-O-M-B.
Yes. Yes.
I see some of that coming through also, a dose of that being provided by poetry. I obviously, like everyone else, read the news and tune into the news and am often captivated by it, but I also just have to in terms of maintaining any kind of a balance of any sort, off-kilter or otherwise. I have to find a little bit of solace in the written word, the poetry especially, and so I think we need both of those in the survivor kit.
All right. So, what do you think you learned about yourself writing Patchways?
Well,
anything new?
I think I learned through writing that book. The poems in that book that, yep, indeed, I'll finish one day, but that I'll never really be finished.
Mm.
And that I also feel that the book helped me realize that love arrives and comes and settles in many, many guises, in many, many different ways. And as I get older, I love things that when I was younger, I simply took for granted. So I also think that it kind of taught me that breath is a gift, Michael. You know?
Yes.
So hopefully there'll be more breath available to write a few more books. But that one, you know, the Patchways kind of helped focus on those sorts of issues for me.
We've almost reached the end of our time together, unfortunately, but could you please share a couple more?
I'd be honored to, Michael, and let me just pause and say once again how much I've appreciated your spirit, your heart, and your overall approach here this evening, and every time that you offer one of these in-depth visits with a poet. I've thoroughly enjoyed being here this evening just as much as I've enjoyed listening to you as you interview others. Nice. I will end with a couple of poems. This one is an in midair love song, and it was also in first appeared in Angel House Press. It's titled Spilling Wings. Say I to you these sighs of spilling wings, all lifted in this once for us. Say I to you by beams like dawn and rise, or even more, how open climbs beside us. Say I to you of wants and new, that pillows sing for waking in and with us. How grateful lips ring this I to you, then hovers us on will be. And this last poem is a poem that's really agog with gratitude, Michael. It's I think it's the final poem in the book, I believe. It's near the end, I know that. It's titled Fun. For whatever gurgles or winks first or strays, for what lives like maps or rummages, and for corners near or far, or noons that are in love with weathered rocks. For this vista's curve and slant, or fences lost in weeds, for all the fun that sideway makes, and especially for whatever shares the shade. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Hiram. Wow, incredible. One thing I'd like to know, what surprises you most about being a poet?
Well, if I had to narrow it to one or possibly two, if I could cheat and say two things. One is, just as I was mentioning earlier, the number of wonderful poets writing today. It's amazing and incredible. And the number of journals or outlets for those poems to appear in, amazing number of journals. And the other thing that kind of continues to surprise me is my love of poetry. I mean, I don't know that when I was a teenager and was starting to write poetry that I ever imagined that I would still be writing it.
Oh, wow.
into the great beyond of my 70s. I recently turned 70, so, you know, it's like, I can't believe that we've been on this path together, me and poetry.
Mm. Where can one find the book? Where can it be purchased?
Well, I have a website that's www.HiramLaRueCoetry.com. And I think that, well, no, there's information there about the book and about purchasing it. And then certainly on CyberWit, CYBERWIT, all one word, CyberWit Press's website. They've listed it there as well.
All right. What's next for you, my friend? Where do you go from here creatively?
Well, I mentioned whistling. I'm hoping that my partnership with the professional whistler is going to be surprisingly wonderful, and I think it's going to be. Poetry X Hungers continues to, as they say, cook with gas. I've got several things. We've got several things brewing there that are very exciting, and looking forward to the coming months of that initiative. And then, you know, Michael, I'm a poet, so there's always a thought about a next collection in mind. I've even got a little bit of an idea of the title, but, you know, we'll see how that all plays out. But kind of looking ahead to maybe another collection.
I would like to know, though, before we go, more about Poetry X Hunger. Tell me more.
Sure. Well, several years back, first off, my background is in the farming or agricultural sciences. That's the area I worked in and was trained in and so on and so forth. And I was writing poetry the entire time I was working. When I retired, I kind of looked up and out and realized that there really wasn't too much poetry available about hunger, empty stomach hunger. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of poems about hunger of the soul and spirit and heart, but
yes,
not too much empty stomachs. And so I thought, you know, well, why don't we see if we can encourage poets to write about that? And so fast forward, we have now about 400 poems on the website, and those are being used. That's the most important thing. They are being used to raise funds for anti-hunger groups. They're being used in religious services. They're being used in community gatherings, by food banks, by the United Nations. And so they are being used to kind of what I call speak back to hunger. And so anyone who's listening who would like to submit a work to Poetry X Hunger, just go to the website and say poetryxhunger.com and look under the submission guidelines. We'd love to see more poems.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank you for sharing your work and for being you. That's what came through to me. The realness of you. I like that. We don't see or hear a lot of people just be themselves. And wow, that's all I can say.
Well, I appreciate that. It's a mutual admiration society we've got here going, Dr. Ingram. So thank you so much for the time you spent, the quality time you spent this evening with me.
Well, Hiram LaRue, everyone. Dr. Hiram LaRue. Patchy Ways, an incredible collection. Go
thank
out right
you,
now. Order it tonight. 1 million copies. All right.
Thank you.
Well, as I share with everyone every week,
thank
poetry
you.
Yes. Somewhere throughout the land. Good night, Hara.
Thank you, Michael. Good night.
All right. Good night. Good night, everyone.
Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio, is available on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You can also check out the website at qlpor.com.